My name's Ron. I'm an alcoholic. And I was one of those fortunate lost souls that got to go through Serenity Park and learn all the wonderful things and get this thing kind of figured out a little bit with Joe McQuaney's help. And luckily there was one woman, well, there's a lot of women up there, super duper, but this one woman really touches my heart. I love her dearly, and anytime I get a chance to see her, it just makes me smile. And Shirley B is going to introduce our speaker tonight.
Good evening. I'm the real alcoholic, and my name is Shirley. I'm truly, truly grateful to be among the land of the living rather than the walking dead. And I'm grateful, and I give all the honor right now just for this privilege to be able to introduce Joe. Down through the years, he has inspired me to stay on the journey. And it is an honor for me to even to be in the room with him and get the information that I have received. I got the opportunity to work with him, and from working with him, so much has been revealed. And for me to be able to stand and say, Joe, we love you. And they said in order for a person to speak is to let him speak. So this time, it is Joe's hour, and we are truly grateful to have you. God bless you.
I guess they started about 12, 15. But I remember the first time I took a drink. I remember my very first drink. Remember my first drink, my last drink. That's all I'm trying to remember. My first and my last. There was a lot of difference between the two drinks, what they did to me. You know, Dr. Silkworth mentions that too. You know, I remember that first night with four of us together, we had a half pint of four rooms. I don't think they make that stuff no more, do they? But four roses, had a bottle and four roses on it, red one and pink one and I don't know other color, but four of them on there, but all of them would get you. But anyway, all of them got me that night. I remember that first drink, and Dr. Silver said that, he said, what we don't realize about alcohol, don't affect no two people the same way. In fact, no chemical affects an individual the same. We all different weight, different size, different makeup, different chemistry in our blood. No human like, so no effects of alcohol are different from every individual. But on us, he said, we get a unique experience. And when I took a drink and now I got a felt a sense and ease and comfort. It came in once for taking a few drinks of alcohol. I figured everybody in the world got the same diet, the same drink I did, but I got something different. It did something for me it didn't do for other people. I didn't know that. I thought they got the same effect I did. They asked me, how you drink? I said, I drink like everybody else. No, I don't. I drink like Joe drinks. And that's bad. I take a drink, I get a sense and ease and comfort. Come to once, taking a few drinks. Just a sense and ease and comfort. Right away, taking a few drinks. Drinks I see other people taking with impunity. They're buying them. But to me, what is it doing to me? To me, I get a sense and ease and comfort. Come to once, taking a few drinks. And when I get that comfort, I want some more and more and more of it. And the craving trigger, and I go through a well-known spree. I ended up drunk, made a fool of myself, my new girlfriend, made a mess out of me, messed up her life because she ended up marrying me. Okay, and you know, all these things come as a result of this little sneaky thing that snuck up on me. I didn't know I had a disease, I had a problem I didn't understand. I went to the doctor about a couple of years ago. And he come tell me, I said, Joe, I have to explain to you, you got a thing called Parkinson's disease. He said, don't ask me about it, I don't understand. I said, what the hell do you understand? Give me a list of what you know about so I can have that next time. I need all these damn diseases. How am I get you don't learn about it? So we don't know a thing about it. Don't ask me. I said, okay, well, I've lived it. But I remember the night and the occasion that first drink. And then the years together, I remember about 18 years later, I was standing in a place one night and I was sick and I was beat out. And I went to get a drink and I messed up. And I ended up next morning standing in this old bar. Down here 14th and Chester Street. Right across the liquor store. There used to be a little bar. I don't know if y'all remember y'all. You know, they tear a bar down. I remember a little bar they called a Picture, wasn't it? The Picture, they called it a little thing. And it was more or less a white joint, but the white folks quit coming over this neighborhood, so they turned it into a black place, and mostly blacks was going in and out there. And second time I've ever been there, but I went and needed a drink that morning. I went over and bought my half pint of vodka. Came back over to the bar and offered me a beer. I needed a beer to chase the vodka down. You know, it got too hot. You know how we are. Sister Needham Company didn't, the idea of Sister Needham Company didn't come that morning. I took the drink and I still felt the pain. I still felt the all the uselessness of my life came through the drink. And it didn't do nothing to me that morning. I didn't get no Sister Needham Company. And I began to think about, you know, you don't have to do something. I said, what do you mean? You have to do something. Things are going, you can't make this very long. This ain't going to last. It was real frightening to me, too. The first time booze ever turned on me. And it burned through the alcohol. And I said, what am I going to do? I said, I'm going to need some help. And this is why, that's why I finally surrendered. He got up and he said, you know, the Sister Needham Company didn't come. He talking about how it scared him and he was shaken back. You know, I was shaking that morning. And I got up and I didn't go to Serenity. I wasn't no Serenity out there. I went to thank God. I went to a state hospital. The only thing we had was state hospital. If you ever been to state hospital, you feel like we need to surrender. But I remember in state hospital, I got out there in the morning, and on Saturday morning, and all the days ago was Saturday. See him coming in the Serenity today, and I watch him. I still, they got the same hurt, the same shakes, the same pains I got. I had that morning. They hadn't changed. You know, they had lost just like I was when they come in the door in the morning. You know, sometimes I stand on judgment of these people. And I help some other people say, what is he doing? I said, well, I don't know. I guess he wants to get sober. What's wrong with a man wanting to get sober? Some of us get the attitude now. We were better than these people. They in the same. We was in the same shape one day. We was in the same shape there, and we see them. So I think about that. I remember the person that helped me was over there. He passed on. All of them are surely gone now. He was an aide out there on the way. His name was Tucker. And they said, I'm about to give me a shot or something. Don't give him no shot. All you can get out of him is whiskey. I said, he don't need no shot. See, these shots ain't going to help him none. And that's about the only thing they did. They gave you a shot. And they run some kind of test on you to make sure you wouldn't get them nuts sick out there. And they didn't want their nuts to catch from nothing from you. They don't worry about you doing that. They don't want you to give them your tuberculosis, what they wanted. So, they checked me in and put me on in there. And this is where my life began to change as a result of these steps. Because the steps were already on the way to me through my sponsor. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That Wednesday, I went in on Saturday. It was Wednesday evening. And it was a meeting that was set up out there by Miss Cooper. Any of y'all know Miss Cooper? Yeah, a lot of us know her. Sometimes I don't tell about she ain't important, but she's an important part of my life. I'm going to talk about it tonight. Miss Cooper was a social worker, a black social worker. I say black because she had three wards, I think, in state hospital. 80 people on a ward, and she was the only social worker we had out there for black people. And she took care of all the, you know, writing notes from, letters from, corresponding with the family. She did everything, all the black people needed. Miss Cooper did that. And she worked out there 35, 40 years doing that. She retired about 6, 7 years ago, 10 years ago maybe, but she did it for 35 years. And she was there when I was there. She's an old friend of Lou Bell, so she knew Lou Bell. She didn't know me. I mean, she helped me that morning. I remember I didn't know her personally, so I couldn't talk to her no way. I couldn't say nothing. I said, except what she told me to do, and do it. Okay, she told me about she'd been wanting to start an AA thing or something, and she wanted me to help her. And I was going to be the one to help her. I said, hell, I don't know about what you're talking about. What are you talking about me helping you with? I don't even know anything about it. What kind of, I can help you. I'll help you. I never heard of it before. He said, oh, we're going to get a house. We're going to put some people in. What are we going to do all that for? We're going to show them how to stay sober. I said, what about me? And me and her, she showed me where the house was later years down here before you get to Roosevelt Road. And I said, shoot, this woman's crazy. What the woman talking about? And, you know, but God had put me a part of my life. Let me tell you how she got in my life. And God sent the best to me. You know how she got in my life? She was in New York. She was out there at work one day at State Hospital, and she would burn up, tired, wore out on that job. All them people running crazy, hollering at her. She said, I just need to get away. I just need a little rest. She said, I need a vacation. She said, I'll be honest. She said, I saw when they wanted somebody to go to New York to a summer school of alcoholism. And then nobody applied, and I needed a trip. I needed to get away. She said, I wouldn't have done. She said, I had no interest at all in alcohol, nothing else. But I wanted to go, so I left, and I took a trip, and I went to New York City. And she met Bill Wilson. And she said she was fascinated by it. She said she wasn't worried about alcoholism, but she was fascinated by the alcoholics that she met, the recovered people. She said they were the most fantastic people she ever met. And she met Bill. And I have a picture of that group. It's about 100 some people on a long picture. And you build down one end, she's in the middle, and you can see a little black face and a whole big sea. And she told me about that, and she said that when it was over, Bill, he said, I'd like to have some of those, one of those things in Little Rock come to my ward and stay. He told me where she worked and everything. And he said, well, you look them up when you get back. You might find somebody that can help you. So it's just getting started. It's just starting out and just going from place to place. And we can't control it, but I think you got one, Little Rock. You'll check when you get back. And so she got back and she checked with downtown and they would locate the local AA group. And she met my sponsor in that group. And she asked him, would he come out? They were trying to get around and get out to these places, but they didn't know them about them. They were glad to come out, so they went out there to stay in the hospital. And that brought me a little closer. My sponsor was one of the guys, Bill White, and Neil Burdock, and another guy named Charlie Clark, my sponsor. All three of them went out there. So they were going to start a meeting. And they were going to meet out there this Wednesday. I guess that's why I went out there, because there needs to be somebody out for a meeting. They didn't have nobody else out there but fit to go, but some nuts. Now, the nuts love to go there. They love it. The crazy people, the mental people loved it. It wasn't nuts. I mean, but they had other problems other than alcohol. They had other problems I didn't have. And the doctor, I go and tell the doctor now, and they say, "Well, Joe, I think he's got alcohol. He might be alcoholic, but something else wrong with him." He's dual addicted. I said, "No, yeah, but the big one is something else." Okay. So, as we went on Wednesday night, they told me, they said, "You can go to this meeting." And I said, "Okay," I went out there. And I expected. But, you know, everybody else was talking. My sponsor got him, he started talking. And he talked to me just like I was, he had known me for all my life. He told me what was happening to me. Told me about the things that happened to me, where I was headed, what was going to happen in my life. And he told me in a very short period of time, take a minute or so to tell me what's wrong with me. And I've been searching all around, this guy knows it all. So I was impressed about him. I was listening to him. I scooted upside him when the meeting was over. I didn't find out where this guy was coming from. Because he talked to me like he'd been watching me every day of my life. And he said, he told me what's going to happen to me. He said, "You're going to die, or you're going to get well, or you're going to get locked up the rest of your life." He said, "And three choices." And that's what they are today. Locked up, sold up, covered up. You know, alcoholics, we're going to end up in three places you can end up. You get locked up, you know, in a prison, a place like that. Or you can get, they're going to end up in jail, locked up. And they end up covered up in a graveyard, right? And he said, I told him, I said, "No, I ain't telling. You know, you don't know who you're talking to." He said, "How you want him time?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Man, you gonna have a good time." He was like, and they had told me, he said, "They kind of want me to sponsor you." I said, "Sponsor me? I don't need no sponsor. I sponsor myself." I said, "I work every day. I don't need nobody. I'm talking about financial." I said, "I don't need no sponsor, man. I got enough to have. I just make things work." He said, "No, we ain't talking about that. You need somebody to show you what to do with your life." I said, "Oh, I'll have a few problems, but I can get together." You know, Bill and I had been married about 2 years. We got married on a trip. You know, I did her. Bill had a nice job, a new car, and a little house down there on Spring Street. We still live in the same house. So we ain't no big shots. Little small house. Still live in the same place 50-60 years later, so we ain't made much financial progress. We sure have a lot of other treasures in our lives. Treasures ain't got nothing to do with money. I tell you about it, they ain't got nothing to do with money. They ain't got nothing to do with your car. It's what's in your heart that counts. And that's where our treasures are. The many lives that we've saved, the many people that we've touched, you can't replace them with money. But we didn't have no money, but we had a lot of treasure. Had been married 5 years. I had been married 4 of our first marriage. And tonight, we're looking forward to celebrate our 49th birth, 49 years, next Christmas. That second marriage, that's pretty good for second marriage, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. She was coming off her, and I just coming. We were both dangerous for each other. I was going to tell her about all the great things I've been doing. I grade my life work. She tell me I grade her. Both of us going to hell in a handbag. But she had a new car. I didn't have nothing. I was kind of staying with my sister and living out of this suitcase. I had a little suitcase about that big. You couldn't hardly see the thing. And it wasn't too full either. But that's the way I came up. I've been here a couple of years, I guess, but I came over. The night I came out of Louisville, Kentucky. And I was drunk on a bus and had the suitcase stacked up with my life possessions, and it wasn't full. And I got out of a bus down here, 4th and Broadway, where the bus station was there. Right across from there, over there, way across from Holiday Inn there. And I had about $2.35 in my pocket. I got Little Rock, so I wasn't no wheeling dealer, was I? I wasn't making it out too good. And I ended up, I worked for 2 years and ended up down that front of the state hospital. $2.35. And my sponsor, he was smart at it. He's as smart as he could be. He was smart at it. I should have slapped him in the face. But he was pretty good. He was pretty good. He'd been in prison all his life. He knew how to roll with you, so I wasn't going to take him on too fast. But, you know, he said, I told him, I said, let me tell you something, man, I don't play. He said, I don't play either. He said, I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth. He said, I've been living with people like you all my life. And this guy was uniquely chosen to help me. He wasn't just a white guy coming down the road. This guy had unique experience. See, he got locked up when he was 17 years old and got out when he was 19 and went back when he was 20 and stayed until he was 37 years old. So he had been in prison all his life. If you're in prison, you're living with black people, and most of all in there. And they run it, and they language, everything. He knew it all. He was uniquely chosen. He had experience from meeting me. He knew how to work with people like me. And he told me, he said, I don't care what you say. He said, I can help you. I said, I don't need your help. And you know, we didn't have no AA relationship before we met. It wasn't nothing. But the guy kept on reading my mail. He would read my mail. Every time I said something, he was already in front of me. He'd smile. He'd smile. He would say, "Well, fool." And I said, "Well, look." He said, "Well, how come you want to see your life together?" I said, "I got to make some money. I got to go back to work." He said, "What you got to go back to work for?" I said, "I got to make some money." He said, "What about the money you was making?" I said, "Oh, I messed that up." He said, "You mean you went to work and threw all your money away?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You must be a damn fool." I said, "What do you mean?" came. He said, you know, you go to work and come home, throw your money away. And I said, I'm going to take care of that. When I get out of here, I'm going to go to work. I'm going to show you how to do it. So I did. I had that in my mind. I'm sick of, we not come to AA. I'm sick of being broke. I was sick and tired of being broke and working broke. Anybody live in the United States and work, ought to have some money. So you can make some money here. You can in this country. You can make some money. You got interest. You got a whole lot of ways to make money. So that ain't an excuse. But for some reason, I'm working and I'm still broke. I said, man, that's stupid. You know? I got out of hospital. I went back on my old job, same old job I had when I went in. I worked out of cow shed, and they were paying you $1.25 an hour. Plus tips. And I didn't care about, but I worked for the tips. I didn't need no $1.25 no hour. But, you know, one day I was standing out there and those sermon said, Joe, what you doing daytime? I said, I ain't doing nothing. I'm from a little job. He said, why don't you come out? He said, Johnny's got some work around here. He wants done painting windows and washing windows and doing stuff like that. Do you mind doing that? And I said, no. Down inside, I said, you damn right, I don't do that kind of stuff. You need to get funky. I don't do that kind of stuff. I'm too good for that. You know, I don't pick up nothing but a plate and a cup of coffee. You know, my hand, I don't get my mouth, that's my hands and crap like that. So I showed up the next day and he hired me. He gave me $1.25. And I went to work. When the week was over, I remember Johnny coming and I was going to my check cash. And I said, I'm going to the bank was down there. The bank was over there in the central office here. It was just a trailer sitting in there. Hadn't put the bank in there. He had a trailer sitting over there. And I went out there and I opened me up. I said, I'm going to open up a bank account. And I opened me up a bank account that day. I said, I'm going to save some of my money, and I did. And one thing, my mother taught me when I was little to save my money. When I was 9 years old, she took me out and got me an account. And I saved my money all until I started drinking and messed it up. But I went back and I started putting money back in. I said, I'm going to put some money here today. I put $200 in. I went back and I put another 25 the next week, 25. I was saving 25% of what I made a week. And I did that until I retired. I saved my money. 25% of all the money I made from the day I started working until I retired. And then I took some of it and invested some of it. Never made no money, never had no money, never needed to make no money. There's plenty to live on in this country. There's plenty of money to be made if you put on away what you got. Right? So I learned a lesson there. And we haven't had any money problems since then. You know, money problems come from drinking. And we got rid of drinking and got rid of money problems right away. You know what I mean? These things all go to get one, take care of the other. So if you ain't got no money today, don't feel bad. But something wrong with your thinking. Because if your thinking was straight, you should have some money. So, you know, I tell people, money is just a symptom of the problem. Money ain't the problem. Money is just a symptom of the problem. So, Miss Cook and I got out of the hospital. I didn't see her right away. I guess she's caught up with her new ideas. And she'd come around and cuss out the meetings and get me and go to me. We'd go to Benton, we'd go to Germans, we'd go to different places. Around the place where around the stairwell we was welcome to go to an AA meeting. And I was going down the dormitory at 509 Victory. And 509 Victory was at 14th and Scott. 14th and Scott was 509 Victory at 4 moved to 509 Victory. The house on the corner where the four ladies are. The lady, 14th Scott, yeah, I know 14th Scott is the place there where the ladies was they sang on TV or something. But that's where it was, and I remember many mornings sitting on that porch. And they finally come in and they're going to restore that house, so they kick the drunks out. Always kicking drunks out. I mean, I don't want to use places that they come out and kick us out. So, it was quite a deal. We went through that, and we went to 24-hour club, moved to 7509 Victory. It was mostly when Neil took over, and a lot of us had a great time around the old dormitory, 509 Victory. We had a woman's dormitory too. You might not remember that, but the woman's dormitory was a place, a special place, but we know about it. There's a special place and special women over there. They've been there for years and years. I was blessed to be a part of that in my life. I used to go over there and help them. We used to go over there and help the women. I kind of talked on the steps. I'd love to talk on the steps. Neil Burdock told me I'd talk on the steps. Neil Burdock was the only person in the town that knew anything about the steps, as far as I was concerned. And he could tell you what they were doing. He'd be on the blackboard, he'd make his marks on the board, lay it out. Bill White was over at Benton Detox Center in the 70s, and he asked me to come down there. And I said, man, I'm running the center now, you know it? He said, yeah. He said, well, why you ask me to come down there? He said, well, you can help swim. I said, hell, I got 17 up there I'm trying to help. I ain't got no time to come out here and help yours. And that's where I felt, too. I said, hell, they're paying you to help them. Don't you know how to help them? He said, no. I got mad and I said, I'll be down there Tuesday. That Tuesday, I got mad and I went down there. And there he was standing there, his little hat and little stuff. And I said, well, he said, they're in the basement. So I went down the basement. There was an old blackboard. Remember the old boy? Anybody down there remember the old blackboard he used to have? I rolled it out and got me a chalk. And I started doing a talk. And I said, well, what kind of talk do you think they need to hear? I said, they ought to hear the first step. First thing, if he's drunk, then he need to know why he's in here. And I can take that board and I can prove to him why he's in here and why he can't beat it and where he's at. And so I did. And they clapped like they enjoyed it. Shit. I went back the next week. I was able to prove a little bit. It took me actually the first step. You see it down on the video today. The first step, the way I do it, was done at Benton Detox Center, a place I didn't want to go to do something I didn't want to do. And I did that, and that's become the foundation for my life. My life work is based on that. Because through that problem, people see their solution, and they get the plan of action to get there. And that's what the book is all about. Everything I do is based on that. What's your problem? What's the solution to it? And how do you find it? That's what the steps teach you. Bill said these steps will teach you your problem like nothing else. And then you can see a solution. If you can't see a solution, you understand the problem. And you don't need the 10 steps of recovery unless you have the problem. So these three things were a great part of my life. So over a period of time, I began to fool around with this through 1972, 1973, 1974, 1975, finished in 1975. And, you know, it was documented, we wrote it up and sent it out to people. And people began to ask for it, and we set up the Kelly Foundation, which owns these materials. I don't own nothing. Search for Serenity. Not Search for Serenity, but steps we took and this type of thing. But these are not, I see the royalties off of these things. But none of them belong to me. They belong to the people who publish them. And they send me a little something, a few dollars or something. I ain't too much. People think I make a lot of money. I don't know what I can make it off of. But I am well protected. I don't need any. I am well taken care of. God gives me everything I need. I mean everything. Yeah, I went to build. Start building them a new place over there for women. And I tell you what, I'm building because I gotta have it to stay open. That sounds strange, doesn't it? You know, I call myself trying to be nice to people, doing what was right. You know how we get in trouble doing right. See, part of my job is helping people. So I want to start off. I wanted to help people. So I grabbed a bunch of men. We got them going, got them started. Many years we were very successful. We wrote a program on how the problem was, what problem we were using over there, how to use it, and everything else. It took off. It got successful. It's called the Kelly Foundation. I got the Kelly Foundation. I got Serenity House. They run the park. I got two entities. And they're working fine, one helping the other. Because the problem that Kelly's selling is the same problem that Serenity has developed. And if we could sell that, then we could use that money to run the Serenity out. So we had things going pretty good for a while. But then we got in trouble because we weren't helping women. We weren't helping no women. You can't go to a company, you can't go nowhere in the United States and say, I want to help you, but I don't help no women. They'll put you in jail, stuff like that. That's what I've been doing, right? So I ain't helping women because I want to. I'm helping women because I need to. See, if I don't get some women in that place, something's gonna happen. I got companies. I got people all over the world want to come here for treatment. Y'all might not want to. We got people from other side of the country that want to come here, but they gotta come here if I don't treat women. They say they want to know what the hell calling every day. It would get calls. People want some help from women. And it's not fair. And women deserve a good opportunity like everybody else. And that's what we're going to offer when the new facility is open. You're going to see a fine facility. You're going to see a facility like no one else in this part of the country has ever seen for women. And you're going to be proud to be a part of what we are producing. Okay, so that's what it's moving out. Things have changed. I haven't changed, but things have changed on what we're doing, why we're doing it. We're doing it for, and we got to survive. And to survive, we got to work together. And we're setting up an institution. Yes, we It's going to be the same as like AA is set up. It's a non-profit group. AA is a non-profit group set up to help alcoholics. And the biggest one in the world. Right? The biggest non-profit group in the world to help alcoholics. And, you know, nobody makes any money. They don't need no money. They got a good business. They got plenty of books to sell. Everything works fine. And they don't have a problem at all. So that works. That's the way I'm going to say it. I've been like, hey, you don't need to come with me. You don't make no money. We pay our money to the people that work. The counselors, the professionals, the ones who are going to do the help, they'll get paid. Oh, yeah, they'll be paid. The people pay better than anybody getting paid. But they don't need to pay nobody to, don't pay nobody no great big money to run the typewriter. You know, a volunteer can run the typewriter. So we're gonna change things the way we're gonna be successful. After I got sober, I started hanging around the dormitory every morning, working at night out there waiting tables. And I don't know. I got sober after 5 years, 4 or 5 years working on the steps every morning. You're supposed to get sober one of these days. I found that thing worked for me. I realized that I had made it made. I wasn't gonna ever drink again. I realized my life had really changed. Something exceptional happened in my life. It wasn't just it was something more than I ever expected. And I found out I had ability to help people and they were listening to me. I remember when I first got sober, I go by, I pick them up, they tell me they want me by, they shut the door and look out there until I left. My car was gone, they said, food's gone, y'all can get the drinks out again. But eventually they begin to listen, people begin to get sober. I had the first black guy came to me. In 1963, I saw him 62, and he wanted to go to the dormitory, and I got him in the, he was the first black guy to get in the dormitory. And they wouldn't let me in there because I wasn't the right color. But they wouldn't let this guy in there either. But I found that they finally told me, said, well, we'll take him. But you have to sponsor him. I said, okay, I'll sponsor him. I brought him up and put him in there. You know, the first thing he told me, I don't really like black people. I said, man, you better hush your damn mouth. He sat up in the place, complaining, I couldn't even get in. They wouldn't let me in. He done got in, now he's complaining. Let me tell you about it. I told him what to do. That guy left, he went on back up. I think it was in Wisconsin. We were playing in Monroe. So we were playing here. Someone in Wisconsin got in trouble and went to prison up there. Got out and got in AA and got sober. And called me. Today I think he got about 25 years. But, you know, I didn't have to do any recovery. I just worked with him and did what I could. Like I have for all the people I try to meet, do what I can for. Well, don't get, well, they don't be your sponsor. I can carry you a message, and my message is, I have recovered as a result of these steps. That's the only message I got. And I think, you know, over the past years, everybody wants to say this about you, say that. The very same person say to me, I have carried this message to many people. You know, people come up to me and say, I carry this message to 500,000 people in a year. That's unbelievable. But, you know, I've had the opportunity to put in position to do this. This is my job. It seems like God is my responsibility to carry this message to other people. I'm doing. I said, oh, I don't care whatever you say, but I know you're going to take on Australia and Europe and everybody in the world. And we carried this thing to 500,000 people in 1 year, the big book study. You know, I was gone. Nobody knew what I was doing. I was over there working so many. I was doing my job I'm supposed to be doing. On the weekend, what did I do? On the weekend, I would be gone. Nobody would know I'd be gone. Where I was, where I'd be going. I might have been in Australia. I might have been in no time where. I've been to every province in Canada, every major city in Canada. I've been in every major city in the United States about two or three times. Every one of them. And little ones. You know, they said to carry the message, but I don't know. I've been carrying it. And it began to pay off, right? I got in this thing, I had to get this place built, I had to have some money to do it. And I began to work around here, I couldn't generate much money. Everybody loves the place, but they like their money too. And I'm not making an appeal from here about no money either. But I found that over the years, we're getting a lot of help nowadays. Some people who have helped heard us speak in different places. People that heard about me. Getting a lot of help. I had a guy to come in here a few weeks ago to give me $100,000 and met me. He said, I said something that happened to change his life about 20 years ago. And he wanted to give me something to help him with the play. So it don't make no difference where people, where it comes from. We're all together. We're all trying to help people. And the guy told me, he said, when I was going to start, he said, how are you going to get the money to do all this? I said, oh, God, give it to me. And he said, give me what I got so far. He said, how much you got? I said, I got everything I need and some more to go with it. He gave me enough. When I started, I was sitting there on 12th Street in the old place, and a guy come by and told me about this old place on 10th and Gaines. He said, it's a good old building, Joe. He said, they're going to tear it down. He said, we can get it for about $100 a month. I said, let's go and look at it. Oh, I looked at the building. It looked nice. And all I had was $300. And I had a bunch of folded up old raggedy chairs. 300 old raggedy chairs. And an old and nice building. Clean but old. And I said, what we started with. And look what we got today. We got what we need. But, you know, we got that paid for it too. Bought the training house in 94. It's paid for today. And we paid for that last year. And we'll pay for this one too. Somebody, we passed on somebody else here. There'll be a plan. There won't be no trouble. There'll be a plan there. And everything should work that way. So, good to be here tonight, and I haven't talked a lot about me. Might see him back. I want to let y'all know what's going on and what's here is going to be here. And we got a long ways to go. We got a lot of work to do. Besides me, because most of our work is just the beginning. It's not in the end. But the excitement of what we're going to do in the next 2 or 3 years. And here are people all over the country in the fellowship that talk about Wolf Street and talk about what goes on here. They talk about it like it's heaven or somewhere. And I see people walking every day and every day wouldn't give a damn about it. Right here in Little Rock. But what they think or not, we're going to move on. We're going to help a lot of people. And a lot of people all over got the message, and they need the message. They look for looking at her after you. And we're going to have to sell this, and we're going to have the thing to do it, and we're going to do it. You know, we got a lot of people in this country who want to come here and get sober. They'd rather come here and pay $3,000 to get sober than to pay $20,000 in Hazen and get the same thing, get something better right here for $33,000. So we can help them, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to help them. We're going to help them. I got some fine people over. I got some fine help. I got some fine counselors, and we're going to help up everybody to get sober, everybody from all over the world. And get sober right here. That's what's going on. And that's what we do in our lives. And you're welcome to be a part in any way. We don't need your money. We need your hand, your effort. We need you to get sober so you can tell them what happened to you. And then that's what we need. God bless you.